say it with humor. Point out that chances are the changing tables will turn once again when your child becomes a parent and rejects your parenting strategies as old school. That said, try to keep two things in mind, especially when you find yourself butting heads with butting-in grandparents. First, they may come across as know-it-alls, but they probably know more than you'd like to give them credit for, and there's always something to learn from their experience, even if it's only what not to do. And second, if parenthood is a responsibility, and it is, grandparenthood is the reward, and it should be. Choosing a baby doctor.
Feel like you've practically been living at your OB's office or on the phone with the OB's office over the 9 months of pregnancy? Well, that's nothing, baby. At least nothing compared with the time you'll spend with your baby's doctor or on the phone or email with your baby's doctor over the next year. Even the healthiest baby needs a lot of healthcare, from well baby checkups to regular immunizations. Factor in those inevitable first sniffles and tummy aches, and you'll see why your baby's doctor will play such an important role in your little one's first year, and in your first year as a parent. And beyond, potentially way beyond. After all, the doctor you choose could be seeing baby and you through some 18 years of runny noses, earaches, sore throats, upset stomachs, bumps and bruises, and more. You won't be living with your baby's doctor during those years, though there will be times, particularly nights and weekends, when you'll wish you were, but you'll still want him or her to be someone you feel comfortable and compatible with. Someone you'd feel at ease asking those questions that aren't easy. Someone who's equally patient with both tiny patients and their nervous parents. Still looking for baby doctor, right? Start your search here.
Health insurance for a healthy family. Think health insurance is complicated and expensive? Get ready for about 8 more pounds of complications and expense. If you're already covered under a family plan, adding your new bundle is as easy as making a phone call once baby is born. Just don't forget to make that call, since coverage for baby doesn't kick in automatically. If you're covered by a plan, but only as an individual, you'll need to do a little more legwork to figure out how switching to a family plan might impact your bottom line. Switching from an HMO, health maintenance organization, to a POS, point of service plan, or PPO, preferred provider organization, for instance, will likely increase your costs, and which type of coverage will best suit your growing family's needs. Speak to someone in human resources where you work, call your insurance company directly, or check out your state's health insurance exchange marketplace as mandated by the Affordable Care Act, where you'll be able to find, compare, and purchase the coverage you'll need. Ask what services the plan covers, routine checkups, immunizations, sick visits, speech, hearing, and vision tests, lab and x-ray services, prescription meds, speech and physical therapy. If there are any limits on the number of well baby or sick baby visits, and what out-of-pocket expenses you'll have to pay. To find out more about the health insurance marketplace in your state, visit healthcare.gov or call 800-318-2596. Worried that you won't be able to afford insurance? Under the Affordable Care Act, you may be eligible for subsidies or tax breaks. Medicaid programs cover those with low incomes, and the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, provides low-cost health insurance for children in families who earn too much income to qualify for Medicaid, don't have employer health insurance available, and can't afford private health insurance. Find out more from insurekidsnow.gov or by calling 877-KIDS-NOW. There are also local community health centers that provide care at low or no cost, depending on your income. Go to findahealthcenter.hrsa.gov. The CDC's Vaccines for Children program offers vaccines at no cost for eligible children. Go to cdc.gov/features/VFC program.
Pediatrician or family physician? The first step on your search for baby doctor, right? Deciding what type of practitioner is right for you. Your choices: the pediatrician. Babies, children, and sometimes adolescents are their business, their only business. And they're trained well for it. In addition to 4 years of medical school, pediatricians have 3 years of specialty training in pediatrics. If they are board certified, they should be, they also have passed a tough qualifying exam. The major advantage of selecting a pediatrician for your baby is obvious. Since they see only children, and lots of them, they know their stuff when it comes to little ones, including when not to sweat the small stuff. They're more familiar with childhood illnesses and more experienced in treating them. And they're more likely to have ready answers to the questions parents like you ask most. From why doesn't she sleep to why does he cry so much? Because they've heard them all many times before. A good pediatrician will also be tuned in to the whole family picture and will realize when a change at home, say a dad's deployment or a mom's return to work, may be the root of a change in a child's behavior, sleeping, or eating habits, or even health. The only downside to choosing a pediatrician, if the entire family comes down with something, strep all around, you may need to call on more than one doctor. The family physician. Like the pediatrician, the family physician usually has had 3 years of specialty training following medical school. But an FP residency program is much broader, covering internal medicine, psychiatry, and obstetrics and gynecology, in addition to pediatrics. The advantage of choosing a family physician is that it can mean one-stop doctoring. You can use the same doctor for prenatal care, the delivery of your baby, and to care for the whole family. Already using a family physician? Adding your new baby to the patient role means you won't have to transition to a brand new doctor, doctor's office, or doctor protocol, and that you'll hopefully already have a comfortable doctor-patient rapport on day one with baby. One potential disadvantage, because family physicians have had less training and experience in pediatrics than their pediatrician colleagues, they may be less practiced in fielding common new parent questions and less proficient at spotting or treating uncommon problems. This might mean more referrals to other doctors. However, the more babies an FP sees, the more pediatric know-how he or she is likely to have built up, minimizing this potential downside. What kind of practice is perfect? Decisions, decisions, and here's another one on your list. What type of practice will best fit your needs and your baby's? The solo practitioner. Like the idea of one doctor all the time, then a solo practitioner might be right up your alley. The most obvious perk of a solo practitioner, you and your little one will have a chance to develop a close relationship with one doctor, which can mean fewer tears and fears at checkup time. The flip side of this perk, solo practitioners aren't likely to be on call around the clock and around the calendar. They'll be around for scheduled appointments unless called to an emergency and on call most of the time, but even the most dedicated among them will take vacations and occasional nights and weekends off, leaving a covering physician in charge, a doctor you and your little one may not know, or at least probably won't know very well. The way to cash in on the upside of a solo practitioner while minimizing the downside? Find out who covers for the doctor you're considering and whether your little one's records will be accessible even when the doctor is not. The partnership. Often two doctors are better than one. If one isn't on call, the other almost always is. If you see them in rotation, you and your baby will be able to build up a relationship and a comfort level with both. The potential downside, which can also be a potential upside, though partners will probably agree on most major issues and will likely share similar philosophies of practice, they may sometimes offer different opinions and advice. Having two points of view, say on a sleep problem or a feeding issue, can be confusing, but it can also be enlightening. One doc's tips didn't cut the colic, maybe the others will. Before you settle on a partnership practice, ask whether or not scheduling checkups with your doctor of choice will be an option. If not, and if you discover you or your baby prefer one or the other, you may spend half of the visits with baby doctor not so right. Of course, even if you get your choice for checkups, sick kids are usually seen based on doctor availability. The group practice. If two are good, will three or more be better? In some ways, probably yes. In others, possibly no. A group is more likely to be able to provide 24-hour coverage by doctors in the practice, but less likely to ensure a close doctor-patient relationship. Again, unless you can schedule the same doctor or two for regular checkups, most practices offer this option. The more physicians a child will be exposed to on well child and sick call visits, the longer it may take to feel comfortable with each other. Though this will be much less of a problem if all the doctors score high on warmth, caring, and baby charm. Also a factor here, the more doctors, the more opinions and advice. Sometimes a perk, sometimes a potential problem. A combined practice. Any of the above types of practices may include one or more highly trained and skilled pediatric practitioners who aren't pediatricians. Pediatric nurse practitioners, PNP, are the equivalent of the nurse midwife in the obstetrician's office. They hold a BSN or RN with additional training, generally at the master's degree level, in pediatrics. Pediatric physician's assistants, PA, who work under the supervision of a physician, spend 2 years training at an accredited program after completing college. A PNP or PA usually handles well baby checkups and often the treatment of minor illnesses as well, consulting with physician colleagues as needed. Problems beyond the scope of a PNP or PA are referred to one of the doctors in the office. Like a midwife, a PNP or PA will frequently spend more time on each visit, which means more time for questions and answers, something you'll really appreciate as a new parent. Having them on your baby's healthcare team will also help keep costs and wait times down. Concerned that you'll have less confidence in the care your baby receives from a PNP or PA? You probably don't have to be. Studies have shown that nurse practitioners and physician's assistants are, on average, at least as successful as, and sometimes more successful than, physicians at diagnosing and treating minor illnesses. Another welcome addition to any pediatric practice, if you'll be breastfeeding, a certified lactation consultant on staff. Finding Dr. Right. Once you've narrowed your field to the right type of practice, it's time to get serious in your search for baby Dr. Right. And the right doctor usually comes with the right recommendations. Here's where to look for those referrals. Your obstetrician or midwife. Happy with the prenatal care you're getting? Then you'll likely be just as happy with a pediatric practitioner suggested by your OB or midwife. After all, doctors usually refer patients to other doctors with similar styles and philosophies. Not a fan of your prenatal provider? Look elsewhere for a recommendation. An obstetric or pediatric nurse. A doula or a lactation consultant. These professionals get an insider's perspective on doctors, so tap into any you know who work with pediatricians in either an office or a hospital setting. You're likely to get a pretty accurate and honest assessment of the care they provide. Parents. No one can tell you more about a doctor's bedside or exam tableside manner than satisfied or dissatisfied patients, or in this case, parents of patients. So ask parents you know, especially those you know who are like-minded when it comes to hot-button topics that matter a lot to you, such as breastfeeding, nutrition, alternative therapies, or attachment parenting. Online medical directories. The American Medical Association websites, drfinder.com, provides basic professional information, such as credentials, specialty, location, and training on the majority of licensed physicians in the United States. Medical websites often offer searchable doctor directories, as do most professional associations for medical specialties, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, healthychildren.org. Just remember that these directories give you only names, not ratings or information on a doctor's quality of care. Referral services. Some hospitals, medical groups, and entrepreneurs have set up referral services to supply the names of doctors in specific specialties. You probably won't get a good read on personality, practice style, or philosophies on parenting practices from these kinds of services, but they will provide information on where doctors you're considering have hospital privileges, as well as on specialties, training, and board certification. Such services will also be able to tell you whether the doctor you have in mind has been sued for malpractice. There are plenty of online lists, referral sites, and user-generated ratings for local doctors. Just type your city's name and the word pediatrician in a search engine and you'll get plenty of hits. Or check out reviewing websites. One caveat when reading reviews on rating websites, you don't know the reviewers or any potential beef they might have with a particular provider, so it's hard to get a true sense of who the doctor is and what his or her expertise, quality of care, and personality is really like. Plus, many of these sites contain inaccuracies, from where the doctor trained to what types of insurance the office accepts, so be prepared to confirm details through your own research, too. La Leche League. If breastfeeding is a priority, your local La Leche chapter, LLLUSA.org, can supply you with names of pediatricians who can offer you the support and know-how you'll need. Some pediatricians have certified lactation consultants on staff. Health insurance provider. Your HMO or health insurance provider will likely give you a list of physicians available to you under your insurance plan, which may narrow down the field quite a bit if you're not prepared to go out of network.
Topics to discuss. Found Dr. Wright? You may not have delivered yet, but you probably have plenty of baby-centric questions swirling around in your head. While you can certainly save a few questions for your first visit with your little bundle, keeping in mind that the bundle may be screaming through that entire first visit, some docs are more than happy to go through a Q&A session before delivery. This can be especially helpful because some of the issues you'll probably want to discuss may come up at or soon after delivery. Here are some topics to consider discussing. Your obstetrical history and family health history. What impact will these have on your new baby's health? Hospital procedures. Ask, any thoughts on cord blood banking and delayed cord clamping? Which tests and immunizations are routine after birth? How will jaundice be handled? How long is a recommended hospital stay? What procedures need to be taken care of if you plan to deliver at home? Circumcision. What are the pros and cons? Who should perform the procedure and when, if you do opt for it? Will pain relief be given to baby? Breastfeeding. If, after the first visit's breastfeeding assessment, you're still having difficulty nursing or just want a reassessment of your technique and progress, can an extra office visit at 1 or 2 weeks postpartum be arranged? Is there an LC in the office or one you can be referred to? Bottle feeding. Whether you'll be formula feeding, supplementing with formula, or expressing milk for bottles, you might want to ask what type of bottles, nipples, and formula the doctor recommends. Baby supplies and equipment. Get recommendations on health supplies such as acetaminophen, thermometers, and diaper rash ointment, and equipment such as car seats.
Making sure baby Dr. Wright is right for you. So you have a list of names, and now you're ready for the next steps, narrowing it down to an even shorter shortlist, and scheduling consultation appointments with the finalists, if possible. Some doctors charge for these visits, others don't. Either way, a late pregnancy meet and greet will help you feel confident that you've found that special someone or group of someones, the doctor or doctors who's right for you and your baby to be. Here are some key factors to consider. Hospital affiliation. It's a definite plus if the doctor you choose is affiliated with a nearby hospital that has a good reputation for pediatric care. That way, he or she can provide or coordinate care if your little one ever has to be hospitalized or receive emergency treatment. Also a perk, if that doctor has privileges at the hospital where you are planning to deliver, he or she can check your baby out before discharge. But affiliation should definitely not be a deal breaker for an otherwise top-notch candidate. A staff pediatrician can perform the hospital exam and arrange for discharge, and you can take your baby to see the chosen doctor after you've checked out. Credentials. A must-have for any doctor you're considering for your baby's care, a residency in pediatrics or family medicine, and board certification by either the American Board of Pediatrics, ABP, or the American Board of Family Practice, ABFP. Office location. Lugging a size 42 belly with you everywhere you go may seem like heavy lifting now, but it's traveling light compared with what you'll be toting after delivery. Going the distance will require more planning than just hopping behind the wheel of your car or onto a bus or subway. And the farther you have to go, especially in nasty weather, the more complicated every outing will become, including those trips to the doctor. Factor in an illness or injury, and a nearby office isn't just convenient. It can mean faster care for your little bundle. Your favorite candidate by far isn't the closest one. Baby Dr. Wright may be worth the trip. Office hours. Working 9 to 5, then you'll probably prefer a doctor who offers some early morning, evening, or weekend hours. Office atmosphere. You'll get your first impression of a doctor's office before you've even stepped inside. When you called for an appointment, were you treated to a voice that was eager to help or one that can't be bothered? Remember, you'll be on that line often as a new parent. Phone friendliness matters and compassion counts. You'll gain more insight when you step up to the front desk of the doctor's office. Is the front desk staff warm and welcoming or frosty and brusque? Are the little patients and their parents treated patiently or with equal parts annoyance and exasperation? Read between those lines and you'll learn volumes. Office decor. A baby doctor needs more than a couple of magazines on the table and a few tasteful prints on the wall to make the right design statement in the waiting room. On your consult visit, look for features that will make long waits less painful for both you and your expected. A fish tank, a comfortable play area, a selection of clean, well-maintained toys and books appropriate for a range of ages, low chairs or other sitting space designed for little bodies. Walls painted in bold colors and child-friendly patterns, orange kangaroos and yellow tigers rather than understated earth tones, and bright pictures also score comfort points with the smaller set. A welcome addition in the family doctor's office, separate waiting areas for adults only and adults with children, as well as separate entrances for well visits and sick visits. Waiting time. A 45-minute wait when you're pacing with a fussy infant or trying to distract a restless toddler with yet another picture book can be a trying experience for everyone. If you're running on a tight schedule yourself, an inconveniently long wait may also be a logistical nightmare. Keep in mind, though, that squirmy babies and sick kids are, and should be, given priority over consults with expectant parents. So don't judge the average waiting time by how long you're kept waiting. Instead, poll the parents in the waiting room and ask how much of the waiting generally goes on in the exam room too, since that wait can be the hardest of all. A long average wait can be a sign of an inefficiently run office, of overbooking, or of a doctor's having more patients than he or she can handle. But it can also mean that the doctor or doctors in the office spend more time with their patients or answering parent questions than allotted, something you're likely to appreciate more during the exam than during the wait. It can also mean that it's office policy to squeeze in sick kids or phone calls with worried parents, even when there's no room in the schedule, something you're sure to value when your child is the one who's sick or you're the parent who's worried. House calls. Yes, a few pediatricians and family physicians will still make them, though often at a premium cost. Most of the time, however, house calls aren't only unnecessary, they aren't best for baby. At the office, a doctor can use equipment and perform tasks that can't be stashed in a little black bag. Still, situations may come up when a house call may be just what the doctor ordered. Say, when your preschooler is home from preschool with a bad stomach bug, baby's down with a high fever and a chesty cough, and you're on duty at home alone in a snowstorm. Call-ins. There will be times, probably more than you'll want to count in that first year, when questions and concerns come up, and you just don't feel comfortable waiting for an answer or some reassurance until baby's next scheduled visit. Enter the phone call, or in more and more practices, email or text. Different offices handle parent calls differently, so be sure to ask about this very important protocol. One approach is the call-in hour. A particular time is set aside each day for the doctor to field calls and or texts or emails, which means you're pretty much assured of getting the advice you need if you call at the designated time. Other offices use a callback system. The doctor or PA or PNP will call back to answer questions when there's a free moment between patients or at the very end of the day. Questions are usually screened and prioritized by the staff. This approach may work better than a call-in hour if you suspect you'll be the type of parent who can't confine concerns to between 7 and 8 in the morning or 11 and noon, or can't contemplate waiting until tomorrow's call hour for relief from today's worries. Still, other pediatric offices use on-call nurses to answer common questions and dispense advice, passing only urgent or complicated medical issues to the doctor. Nurses can also triage the situation, helping a parent decide whether the baby should be brought in for an office visit and how soon. This system usually yields a prompter response and faster relief for parental stress. Protocol for emergencies. Emergencies happen, and as a soon-to-be parent, you'll want to know how they're handled by a doctor you're considering. Some instruct parents to head to the ER for care in case of an emergency, though your insurance plan may require that you call the doctor first. Others ask you to call their office first, and depending on the nature of the illness or injury, will see your baby in the office or meet you at the ER. Some physicians are available, unless they're out of town, days, nights, and weekends for emergencies. Others use colleagues or partners to cover for them during off hours, and some may refer you to urgent care as appropriate. Financial matters. Some offices ask that you make any necessary payments or co-payments at the time of a visit. Others will issue a bill. Some will bill insurance for you or submit paperwork. Others won't. Some offer an optional package deal for first-year care that covers any number of visits. Though the package costs more than the sum of fees for the year's scheduled number of checkups, it's usually a good bet. Two or three sick visits and you'll likely come out even or ahead. Plus, you'll stress less about the cost of extra appointments. Insurance reimbursements for sick visits, package deal or no, will be handled according to the terms of your coverage. Payment schedules are also available in some offices, either routinely or under special circumstances, such as financial hardship. If you think you might need such an arrangement, discuss this with whoever is in charge of billing. You might also want to ask whether routine lab work is done in the office, which can save time and money. Practice style and personality. When you're in the market for a doctor as when you're shopping for baby furniture, the style that's right will depend on your style. Do you prefer a doctor who's laid back and casual, maybe even a hugger? Or one who's buttoned up and in a dress shirt at that? One who's a kidder, even with parents? Or one who's all business? A doctor who likes to call all the shots? Or one who treats you as a full-fledged partner in your little one's care? No matter what your style and doctor styles, chances are you'll want to pick a pediatrician or family physician who's a good listener and a clear communicator, who's open to all questions and who's non-judgmental, who's patient with little patients and their parents, and most of all, seems to really love caring for children, which, of course, most baby doctors do. Philosophy. You won't agree with your baby's doctor on every topic, but it's best to find out up front and before you make a commitment whether you're mainly on the same page with major issues. To make sure your baby care philosophies mesh comfortably with those of the doctor who may be caring for your baby, ask about his or her positions on parenting topics or trends you might be interested in. From breastfeeding to circumcision, attachment parenting to bed sharing, complementary and alternative medicine to immunizations.
Chapter 2. Buying for Baby.
You've probably been itching to belly up to the nearest baby superstore or online baby registry for months now, maybe even before you had a belly. After all, those two cute onesies, is that a matching hat and socks? Cuddly stuffed animals and magical mobiles are hard to resist. But between the slings, swings, and strollers, the cribs and car seats, the burping cloths and blankies, the bibs and booties, buying for baby can get a little overwhelming. Make that head spinning. Not to mention credit card maxing. So before you start sliding that card or clicking register now, be sure to read up on baby gear must-haves, nice-to-haves, and probably don't-needs, so you can stock up your little one's nursery without cluttering it up and without cleaning out your bank account.
Buying the baby basics.
With so many products to buy and register for, you may be tempted just to grab a virtual shopping cart and get started. But before you proceed to checkout, check out these baby buying guidelines. Do your homework before you bring products home. Babies tend to bring out the impulse buyer in everyone, but especially in starry-eyed, first-time expectant parents, and particularly in hormone-hazy moms-to-be. So, to avoid buyer's remorse, when you realize that a newborn's bottom is warm enough without pre-warmed wipes, or that 41 newborn onesies were probably 31 too many, or that you didn't really need Hollywood's favorite jogging stroller when you don't ever plan on jogging in Hollywood or anywhere, think and link before you buy. Read online reviews, do comparison shopping, and tap into your most in-the-know network. Other parents, including those on whatToExpect.com. They'll tell you like it is and isn't when it comes to much-hyped and high-priced products and product features. Shop for the right registry or registries. Before you narrow down your layette list, narrow down the list of stores where you'll be buying or registering for most of those goodies. Consider return policies, because you may end up with too much of a good thing or find that some good things aren't so good after all. Restocking charges, whether purchases and exchanges can be made both online and in stores, and convenience. Is there a brick-and-mortar store close to you and most of your friends and family? But also ask around. Your message board and Facebook buddies who've shopped this way before will be your best registry resources, or even have lists of their own must-haves they've shared. Check out the message boards at whattoexpect.com. Though you may not be able to find one-stop shopping for all your baby needs, try to keep your registries down to a reasonable 2 or 3 by looking for sites or stores that carry most of what you're signing up for. Shop for baby in baby steps. Start with newborn needs. That will be plenty. Hold off buying gear that you won't need until later in your baby's first year, when you'll better know your needs and your little ones. Though consider registering for big ticket items anyway, even if you won't need them right away, especially if you're hoping friends and family will step up to the plate and the high chair. Decided to play the baby gender guessing game? Some stores will allow you to order your layette and not pick it up or have it delivered until after the baby is born, at which time you can specify the colors and patterns to make a more gender-specific statement if you're not a fan of neutral shades. But also remember, there's no layette law that says girls can't wear blue overalls and boys pink polos, or that a girl's nursery can't reach for the stars and planets, and a boy's can't feature bunnies. Be a baby stuff borrower. You're bringing home your own baby, of course, but that doesn't mean you can't bring home some of your friend's baby stuff, or your cousin's, or your sister's, since babies need so much stuff, or really, parents need so much stuff to care for their babies. It makes sense and saves dollars to borrow what you can. All of the gear that really gets used will soon have a lived-in or grown-out look anyway. Whether you borrow or buy new, that's definitely true of clothes. Just keep in mind that safety regulations change and that you should check out any product for recalls or features that don't meet current standards. A car seat is one item that's definitely safest, bought brand new.
A buyer's guide.
Ready to lay out a bundle for your little bundle's layette and nursery? It's true that your tiny baby, who will arrive in the world equipped with nothing but a birthday suit, will be a whole lot more high maintenance in the next 12 months than he or she was in the past 9. But before you get overwhelmed by the lists of clothes, supplies, gear, and furniture that follow, remember they're just meant to guide you. Don't feel compelled to buy or borrow everything on these lists and everything on any registry or layette list, certainly not all at once. Your baby's needs and yours will be unique and ever-evolving, just like you and your baby.
Wardrobe wise. The best thing about shopping for baby clothes, they're so cute. The worst thing about shopping for baby clothes, they're so cute. Before you know it, you've bought out the store, and then another store, and another store. And the nursery closet is jam-packed, and the dresser drawers won't close. And your baby has outgrown half of those oh-so-precious purchases before you even had a chance to unfold them for the first time. To avoid buying too much for baby, keep these practical pointers in mind as you finalize your layette list and head to the store or enter that portal. Babies don't mind wearing hand-me-downs. Fast forward 7 or 8 years, and hand-me-down clothes may be a much tougher sell, but fashion ignorance is bliss for babies. Even if you're a stickler for style, you'll appreciate having even less than styling onesies and rompers standing by for those days when spit up rains, diapers leak, and the washer's on the blink. Those hand-me-downs are a little worse for wear. That's okay. The same will be true of the new clothes you're shelling out those big bucks for by the second time baby wears them. So before you shoot down all those offers you may be lucky enough to get, consider just saying yes instead. And don't forget to check off items borrowed or handed down before finalizing your list. Laundry has a way of piling up. When calculating your needs, consider how many times a week you'll be doing laundry. If you'll be doing loads just about every day, you can buy the smallest suggested number of items on the list, and that goes for cloth diapers too. If you'll have to lug loads down to the local Suds and Spin and can do laundry only weekly, then buy the largest number. Convenience and comfort come first, cuteness second, really. Tiny buttons may be way too precious for words, but the struggle to fasten them when baby's squirming up a storm won't be. An organdy party dress may look festive on the hanger, but the party may be over if it rubs baby's delicate skin the wrong way. An imported sailor suit may look dashing. That is, until you try to change your little matey and find there's no access to the poop deck. And baby skinny jeans? Well, enough said. So, resist the irresistible and impractical, unwashable, and unwearable. And remember that babies are happiest when they're comfiest. And parents are happiest when dressing baby is a dream, not a drag. With this in mind, look for outfits made of soft, easy-care fabrics with snaps instead of buttons. Inconvenient, and should baby manage to chew or pry one off, unsafe. Head openings that are roomy or have snaps at the neck, and bottoms that open conveniently for diaper changing. Feel underneath to make sure seams are smooth, too. Room for growth is another important feature. Adjustable shoulder straps, stretch fabrics, and elasticized waistlines will come in handy. Shop for safety also. No strings or ribbons longer than 6 inches. Shopping up is smart. Since newborns don't stay newborn size very long, some babies have grown out of newborn sizes before they're born. Don't stock up on small sizes unless your baby is predicted petite. It's always more practical to roll up sleeves and pant legs for a few weeks while your little one grows into a size 6 months. In general, shop at least one size ahead. Most 6-month-old babies wear 9 or 12-month sizes, and some even fill out 18-month sizes. But eyeball before buying, because some styles, particularly imported ones, can run much larger or smaller than average. When in doubt, buy big, keeping this in mind. Children grow, and cotton clothes shrink. Seasons change. If baby is expected on the cusp of a season, buy just a few tiny items for the immediate weather and larger ones for the weather expected in the months ahead. Continue to consider the seasons as baby grows, and do the season math when buying ahead. That adorable August Perfect tank top at half price may seem like a total deal until you realize that your fall baby will have outgrown it long before spring's thaw. No tags, and you're keeping it. Of course you're eager to unpack all that new baby booty into your baby's new dresser, but try to resist. It's actually best to keep most of your newborn's clothes tagged or in their original packages with all receipts. That way, if baby checks in much larger or much tinier than expected, it happens, or even a different gender than anticipated, ditto, you can exchange for bigger or smaller sizes or a different color or pattern.
Baby clothes. By far the most fun you'll have preparing for baby will be shopping for those itty-bitty, crazy-cute clothes. In fact, it may take considerable reserves of willpower to keep yourself from overfilling your baby's closet with too many adorable outfits. Just keep in mind, less is usually more than enough, especially when it comes to small sizes, since newborns grow fast. Undershirts, onesies, aka creepers, bodysuits. For your newborn, your best bets are undershirts, short or long sleeve, depending on the weather. That open in the front, with snaps on the sides. These are easier to get on that floppy frame in the first few weeks, and until your baby's umbilical stump falls off, it's better not to have tight clothes rubbing against it. Another option, a onesie with a specifically designed opening at the navel to expose the stump to air and prevent rubbing. Once the stump does fall off, you can switch to the pullover onesie style, which is smoother and more comfortable for baby. These one-piece bodysuits, also called creepers, have snap openings at the bottom for easy diaper access and don't ride up, keeping tummies covered in cool weather. Look for a wide opening at the neck for easy on, easy off. Once style starts to matter more, you can graduate to bodysuits that look more like shirts. Long or short-sleeved, made to be worn under pants, skirts, or leggings. For now, consider buying 5 to 10 undershirts, newborn size, and 7 to 10 onesies. Stretchies with feet. Footed outfits keep tootsies toasty without socks, making them especially practical, as you'll soon find out, Socks and booties, cute as they are, rarely stay put for long. Make sure they have snaps or zippers at the crotch for easy access to baby's bottom, which you'll be visiting quite often. Otherwise, you'll be undressing and redressing at every diaper change. You may find that zippers have the edge since they'll save you the frustration of trying to line up all those little snaps when you're sleep-deprived or in a rush or baby's crying for a feed. Consider buying around 7-footed stretchies. Rompers. These are one-piece, short or long-sleeved outfits with or without legs that typically snap at the crotch and down the legs. Consider buying 3 to 6. Two-piece outfits. These are smart-looking but not as sensible as one-piece. Two pieces are twice as tricky to put on and take off, so try to limit yourself. It will be hard to one or two of them. Look for two pieces that snap together at the waist so the pants don't slide down and the shirt doesn't ride up. Nightgowns with elastic bottoms. While stretchies can stand in as sleepwear, some parents prefer nightgowns for their babies, especially in the early weeks when the easy open bottoms make those middle-of-the-night diaper changes a snap without the snaps. Consider buying 3 to 6 nightgowns and avoid gowns that close at the bottom with drawstrings. Strings over 6 inches are a safety hazard. Sleepwear for children must meet federal standards for flame resistance. A label will tell you whether or not a particular outfit is designated as safe for sleep. Blanket sleepers or sleep sacks. These sleepers keep baby cuddly warm without a comforter or blanket, which should be avoided because of the risk of suffocation or SIDS. These wearable blankets provide plenty of kicking and arm-waving room and can keep a baby cozy during those nights when a stretchy or nightgown doesn't guarantee enough warmth. They come in lightweight cotton for summer nights when the AC is on and fleece for winter sleeping, though to avoid overheating, be sure not to dress your baby too warmly underneath the sleep sack. Consider buying 2 to 3 seasonally appropriate ones. Sweaters. One lightweight sweater will do the trick for a warm weather baby. 1 to 2 heavier ones will be needed if baby's arriving in winter. Look for sweaters or sweatshirts or hoodies, but without strings, that are washable and dryable, as well as easy on, easy off. Hats. Summer babies need at least one lightweight hat with a brim for sun protection. Winter babies need one or more heavier weight hats to stay warm. A lot of the body's heat escapes through the head, and since a baby's head is disproportionately large, there's a lot of potential for heat loss. Hats should be shaped to cover the ear snugly, but not too tightly. Another outdoor accessory to consider for an older baby, good quality sunglasses. Bunting bag or snowsuit with attached mitts for a late fall or winter baby living in a four-season climate. A bunting bag is easier on, easier off than a snowsuit. No trying to negotiate feet into leg holes. But it may have to be retired once baby is more active. Some buntings convert into snowsuits. Any bunting you use should have a slot on the bottom for a car seat strap to make buckling up easier and more secure. Booties or socks. As you'll soon find out, these are often kicked off within moments after they're put on, something you probably won't notice until you're halfway down the street or on the other side of the mall. So look for styles that promise to stay put. You'll need just 5 to 6 pairs for starters. Add more as baby grows. Bibs. Even before you introduce your sweetie to sweet potatoes, you'll need bibs to protect clothes from spit up and drool. Consider buying a minimum of 3 bibs. You'll always have at least one in the laundry basket. Baby's linens. Soft against baby's skin is a given, but here are some other practical hints for choosing the right linens. You'll notice that bumpers and crib blankets and comforters don't make this list at all. That's because none of them are recommended for use in a baby's crib or other sleeping area. Fitted sheets for crib, portable crib, bassinet, and/or carriage. Whatever colors and patterns you choose, when it comes to sheets, size matters. For safety's sake, sheets should fit very snugly, so they can't get loose in the crib. You'll need around 3 to 4 of each size, especially if your baby spits up a lot and you're changing the sheets often. You might also consider half sheets that tie or snap onto the crib bars and go on top of the fitted sheet. It's easier to change just the half sheet than to take up the hard-to-remove fitted sheet. Be sure the half sheets are securely attached. Also, for safety's sake, don't use any top sheets or other loose bedding. Waterproof pads. How many pads you'll need will depend on how many surfaces in your home will need protecting. Think crib, put the pad under the mattress cover, bassinet, furniture, laps. At a minimum, you'll want 1 to 2. Quilted mattress pads for crib. Again, the fit should be very snug, and skip the kinds that have plush tops. 2 pads should be enough, 1 to use when the other's in the wash. Blankets for car seat or stroller. Blankets are fine to use over a baby who's buckled into a car seat or stroller, or a baby who's otherwise being supervised. But don't use any blankets on your baby during sleep, except for that swaddler or sack. Since loose bedding of any kind is a SIDS risk factor, it's much safer to rely on sleep sacks or other toasty sleepwear to keep your little one comfortably warm. Buy 1 to 2 blankets and you're covered. Towels and washcloths. Hooded towels are best since they keep baby's head warm after a bath. And weren't you eyeing that one with the puppy ears anyway? And wash mitts are easier to use than standard cloths. Plus, they're often cuter. Look for soft towels and washcloths and consider buying 2 or 3 towels and 3 to 5 washcloth mitts. Burp cloths. For protecting your shoulders when baby spits up, for emergency bibs, and much more. 12 burping cloths are a good start. If you find you're going through many more because your little one has proven to be a big-time spitter, you can always add to your collection. Receiving / swaddling blankets, swaddlers with Velcro or zip-up pods. Most newborns like being swaddled right from the start, especially during sleep, which is one reason hospitals routinely bundle them in receiving or swaddling blankets. Keep in mind, there are many easier alternatives to do-it-yourself swaddles, from Velcro wraps, some secure baby's arms with swaddle wings within the swaddler, to snug zip-up pods. Two-way zippers allow you to access the diaper region without unswaddling baby, to hybrid swaddle sacks, swaddles on top, sack on the bottom. Since you may have to do some switching around to see what type works best for you and your baby, don't overbuy. Also remember to check the weight minimums and maximums for a swaddler. A very small baby needs to grow into certain kinds, and a very large baby may outgrow them all in no time. You probably won't need more than 4 swaddlers total. Diapers. So, it's a given your baby will need diapers, and lots of them. But the question is, which kind? From several subgroups of cloth to a bewildering range of disposables, there are ever more entries in the diaper derby, but no conclusive winners. How will you choose the diaper that best fits your baby's bottom and your bottom line? First, check out the options. Disposable diapers. They're the first choice of parents by far, and there are plenty of reasons why. Among the perks, disposables are convenient to reach for and a cinch to change, even for brand new parents. Plus, they're easy on the go. You can dump dirty diapers in the trash instead of carting them back home for laundry or pickup. What's more, since they're ultra-absorbent and have an inner liner that keeps wetness away from baby's tender skin, They don't have to be changed as often as cloth diapers. A change for the better, some would say. The extra absorbency and snugger fit also makes them less prone to leaks. Of course, there's a flip side to those favored features. For one thing, a super absorbent diaper can lead to too infrequent changes, which can lead to rashes. For another, when fluid is soaked up so efficiently, it's harder to gauge how much your little one is peeing, making it tougher to judge whether he or she is getting enough to eat. Much later on, the ultra-absorbency in disposables can make potty training trickier. Because toddlers are less likely to feel wet and uncomfortable, they may not be as quick to say bye-bye to diapers. Having to shop for and lug the diapers home is also a potential disadvantage, but this drawback can be avoided if you order online. Another con is price. While cloth diapers come with a greater initial investment, they're way cheaper over the long haul than disposables. And heads up, it will definitely be a long haul before your tot is out of diapers. Something else to add to the con list, if you pull too hard, the tabs on some disposables can easily rip, and inevitably it'll happen when you're on the run and you're down to the last diaper. Also on the minus side, disposable diapers definitely aren't the greenest way to manage your baby's BM. Disposables account for 3.4 million tons of landfill waste per year and don't decompose. There are some disposable insert liners that are flushable and biodegradable. You can use them with non-disposable covers, so they're like a hybrid diaper. Wondering about going green when it comes to disposable diapers? While there are no conclusive studies to show that any of the chemicals, such as dioxin, chlorine, dyes, and gels that lurk in traditional disposables are harmful, a few babies can have allergic reactions to some of that stuff. Choosing from the small array of truly greener disposable varieties can potentially help avoid such allergies and help you feel better about doing your part for the environment. But there are many shades of green, so you'll have to do your homework before settling on one brand. Some diapers that claim to be environmentally friendly actually contain chemical gels, chlorine, or plastic. Others contain corn or wheat, which can be allergenic for some babies. And still others are either not biodegradable at all or are only 60% compostable. Better than 0%, certainly, but important to factor in. You'll also want to try out a few brands until you find one that works for you and your little one's bottom, since some green disposables aren't top-notch when it comes to poop control. One last consideration. These eco-friendly disposables are typically not wallet-friendly. Cloth diapers. Available in cotton, terry cloth, or flannel, cloth baby diapers can come either as pre-folded pieces of cloth liners or as all-in-ones, diapers and covers that look similar to a disposable diaper. Unless you're using a diaper service which rents out cloth diapers, washes them, and delivers clean ones to your door, cloth diapers will save you some money compared to disposable diapers for the same amount of time. If you're worried about the dyes and gels used in some disposables, or want to diaper green, cloth diapers are the way to go. Another consideration, since cloth diapers are less absorbent than disposables, you'll need to change diapers more often. A con if you consider diaper changing a chore, a pro if you find more frequent changes result in fewer rashes. Another plus, potty training, when the time comes, may be easier to accomplish, since cloth-bottom tots are likely to notice wetness sooner, a possible incentive for graduating to underpants. The downside to cloth diapers, however, is that they can be messy, although some come with disposable liners that can make them easier to clean, and they're more cumbersome to change, unless you use the all-in-ones, which are more expensive and take a lot longer to dry. You'll be doing more laundry, too. Probably 2 to 3 extra loads per week, and that means higher utility bills. If you use diaper companies to launder the cloths, remember they'll be using plenty of chlorine to disinfect them, so they're not the completely chemical-free option either. And unless you're using disposables when you're out, you'll probably have to carry a few poopy and smelly diapers back home with you. Something else to keep in mind, many cloth diapers aren't that absorbent initially, thanks to their natural materials. So it'll take a number of washings in hot water, at least 5 or 6, before they reach optimal absorbency. Have a fear of diaper commitment? Some parents decide to use cloth diapers for the first few months, a time when a baby usually spends more time at home than on the go, and then graduate to disposables as the logistics of toting cloth becomes too much like hard work. Others do the diaper combo right from the start. Cloth when they're convenient, disposables when they're not, or at bedtime when greater absorbency can spell a better night's sleep. Also prepare to, yes, go with the flow when it comes to your diaper selection. Some babies end up with a sensitivity or even an allergy to a certain type of disposable diaper. Other babies may just be the kind of heavy wetter or messy pooper that's just not easily contained by cloth. It's always possible you'll be ready for a change of diapers after you've logged in a couple of months of diaper changes. If you're using disposable diapers, buy 1 or 2 packages of the newborn size, and then wait until after baby is born so you'll know how big your baby is before stocking up on more. Babies born smaller than expected, you can quickly order or pick up a stash of preemie size. If you're using cloth diapers and plan to wash them yourself every 3 or so days, purchase 2 to 3 dozen, more if you'll be doing laundry less often, plus 2 dozen disposable diapers once you know baby size, so you can use them for outings and emergencies. If you're planning to use a diaper service, sign up in your 8th month and they will be ready to deliver as soon as you do.
The bottom line on cloth diapers. Trying to get to the bottom of which cloth diapers will best fit your baby's bottom and your needs, here's a little cloth diaper 101. Flats and prefolds. These plain pieces of cotton fabric, similar to the cloth diapers your great-grandparents used on your grandparents, may look simple to use, and they're certainly the cheapest cloth diapers around. But they require some skill. You need to fold the square or rectangular cloth just so to fit your baby's bottom. Fasten it with separate snaps or pins, not so easy when you've got a wee wiggler on your hands, or lay baby in a wrap-style cover, then cover it with a waterproof diaper cover, if you're using pins or snaps, to avoid leaks. Contoured. No folding required with these diapers that have an hourglass shape meant to fit your baby's bum better. Like flats and prefolds, you'll have to fasten them with separate snaps or pins or a wraparound cover and add a waterproof cover to protect against leaks. Fitted. Fitted cloth diapers look similar to the disposable kind and have built-in snaps, hooks, or Velcro to fasten them around your baby's tush. And thanks to the elastic around the waist and legs, these diapers fit more securely than prefolds or contoured cloth diapers, which could mean fewer leaks. You still have to use a separate waterproof cover, though. All-in-ones. All-in-ones, aka AIOs, have elastic around the waist and legs, have built-in snaps, hooks, or Velcro to fasten them, and come in cute colors and designs. Plus, there's no need for a separate cover because the waterproof material is sewn right over the absorbent cloth lining. That's why they're called all-in-ones. They're a relative breeze to use, no diapers to fold or separate covers to add, and are great at keeping the mess inside instead of trickling down baby's leg. But convenience comes at a price. Washing and drying them can also be more time-consuming and expensive because of their multiple layers. Pocket diapers. Like all-in-ones, pocket diapers have an inner cloth lining and a waterproof outer lining, so no need for a separate cover. But there's a separate piece of fabric that you insert into the pocket of the diaper's inner lining. The benefit? It's much easier to adjust to your baby's wetting needs. You can add extra liners to increase absorbency. All-in-twos. These diapers are similar to pocket diapers, except the diaper insert goes directly against your baby's skin. You either snap or lay it in. That way, you can simply change out the insert instead of changing the entire diaper, making diapering a cinch. Another plus? Separating that layer from the rest of the diaper makes for less time in the dryer and lower energy costs. Doublers and liners. Cloth doublers are fabric inserts that provide extra protection no matter which type of cloth diaper you're using, even pocket diapers. Doublers are great overnight and during long naps, but they add bulk and restrict mobility, so you probably won't want to use them when your baby's awake and wriggling. Liners are biodegradable, flushable sheets of fabric or paper that fit any type of cloth diaper. While liners don't provide extra protection, they do make cleanup easier, especially once your baby's eating solids and his or her poop becomes stickier and harder to scrape off the diaper.
Baby's grooming supplies. Babies smell pretty terrific naturally. They stay pretty clean, at least initially. And as far as their grooming, they're pretty low maintenance. When you look for baby toiletries, less is more in number of products. You need far fewer than manufacturers and retailers would have you believe, and in number of product ingredients. Baby bath wash, liquid or foam. To freshen up your baby at bath time, look for a gentle formulation baby bath wash. Some do convenient double duty as shampoo and body wash. No Tears Baby Shampoo. For young infants, No Tears Baby Shampoo is best. The foam kind may be easier to control because it stays put. Baby oil. This can come in handy if you need to gently clean a sticky poop off a sore bottom. It's also often prescribed for cradle cap, but no need to use it routinely or to cover your baby in the stuff. Remember, oiled up babies are slippery babies. Ointment or cream for diaper rash. Most diaper rash creams or ointments are the barrier kind, meaning they act as a barrier between baby's tender tush and the harsh ingredients in pee and poop. Ointments go on clear, while creams, especially those that contain zinc oxide, usually smear on white. The creams, which are thicker than the ointments, tend to provide better protection against or even act to prevent diaper rash. Some brands also contain other soothing ingredients, such as aloe or lanolin. It's always best to try a brand out before you start stocking up. Some work better for some babies than others. Petroleum jelly, such as Vaseline. You can use this to lubricate some rectal thermometers. Others require a water-based lubricant. It can also be used as a diaper rash preventer, though not as treatment for rash. Diaper wipes for diaper changes, hand washing on the go, cleanups after spit-ups, and leaky diaper incidents, and dozens of other uses. There are also reusable cloth diaper wipes if you'd rather go green, or if your baby turns out to be allergic to certain brands. Thinking of buying a diaper wipe warmer to go with? Though some parents swear by a warm wipe, especially on chilly nights, the bottom line is they're not a must-have. Bottoms are plenty warm without pre-warmed wipes. Plus, some warmers dry the wipes out quickly. Another consideration if you're thinking about a warmer. Warm wipes are an easy habit for babies to buy into, and once they do, they may be reluctant to switch to straight out of the package. Cotton balls. For washing baby's eyes and for cleaning that sweet bottom in the first few weeks. Skip the cotton swabs since they aren't safe to use on a baby. Baby nail scissors or clippers. Sharp adult nail scissors are too risky to wield on a squirmy baby, and those tiny nails grow faster than you'd think. Some clippers come with a built-in magnifier, so it's easier to see what you're doing. Baby brush and comb. Far from all babies have hair to brush or comb, so you may or may not end up needing these items in the first few months. Baby tub. New babies are slippery when wet, not to mention squirmy, all of which can serve to unnerve even the most confident parents when it comes time for that first bath. To make sure it's fun and safe to rub-a-dub-dub when your infant's in the tub, invest in or borrow a baby tub. Most are designed to follow a newborn's contours and offer support while preventing him or her from sliding under the water. They come in a myriad of styles, plastic, foam cushions, mesh sling, and so on. Some grow with your baby and can be used all the way through the toddler years when placed in a regular bathtub. When buying a baby tub, look for one that has a non-skid bottom, inside and out, and a smooth, rounded edge that will retain its shape when filled with water. And baby is easy to wash, has quick drainage, a roomy size, large enough for your baby at 4 or 5 months, as well as now. Support for baby's head and shoulders, portability, and has a mildew-resistant foam pad, if applicable. Another option to the baby tub, at least initially, is a thick sponge specifically designed to cushion the baby in a sink or a tub.
The green scene. Forget pink or blue. The hot color these days is green, at least when it comes